right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are yet again, Dom, talking some more Survivor on the main feed. Survivor 41, at the time of this recording, begins in 3 or 4 days, thereabouts. Dominic, welcome back to you, and how are you feeling about this new reality we have found ourselves in, where Survivor's actually airing new episodes again?
Well, welcome back to you as well, of course. And this is perhaps the loosest use of yet again that I've come across recently, because we have not been talking much Survivor or much anything else over here on the main feed. And that may change in short order here, depending on how well the season, you know, if it gets off to a good start. But yeah, it feels surreal to me that we're back here talking about US Survivor again in a decade of podcasting about the show, week by week. This is by far the longest off-season that we've ever had, and really the only one where, at least at the beginning, I doubted if the off-season would ever end. I didn't know if we would have a Survivor 41 to look forward to in God knows how long at that point, right? Whether it was 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, and we're finally back. Survivor is coming back next week, unless this is the worst practical joke of all time that's been perpetrated on all of us here. And I think I'm excited, but I'm trying to tease out how much of that is excited to have Survivor back in possibly its new incarnation, and more on that in great detail over the course of this episode, and how much of that is just the novelty of having it back, the certainty that it actually is coming back. And in this case, the novelty is, it's not something new per se, it's a return to normality. It's almost something that's meant to be reassuring. And I guess part of me is also thinking that if Survivor, this massive production, is able to come back and set all of this up in a way that is safe and logistically possible for them, then maybe that bodes well for other things on a similar scale. So I don't know how much of this is I'm really excited to watch Survivor next week, or how much of it is just, you know, some light at the end of a tunnel possibly after the past 18 months. But either way, cautiously optimistic going into next week, I think.
Yes, I realized as I was saying it in the intro, like, this newfound reality we're finding ourselves in, where Survivor is airing episodes on TV. Like, okay, yeah, that's exactly what's been going on pretty much constantly for the last 20 years, and is maybe not as big of a deal as I'm making it out to be. But I think you're right that it feels like a return to normalcy, normality.
Heard it both ways.
Yeah. Heard it both ways, of course, yes. And more generally, it is, at least for me, and I would be curious if we could somehow know, like, the general population's thoughts along these lines. It still doesn't even feel real to me that Survivor is about to be back after what, you know, by relative standards was easily the longest break we've ever had from it airing new episodes in essentially my entire adult life. I was 12 years old when this show started airing and I started watching it, and I've, with a couple of exceptions, basically never missed an episode, like, within the week that it aired. So still having a hard time just even comprehending that this is going to be the situation yet again. And I don't know that it's necessarily even specific to Survivor at this point. Like, I'm a diehard fantasy football player, and the NFL has just resumed, and it still doesn't feel real to me that that is back on. And I'm guessing that that's going to have a kind of noticeable impact on how at least the early episodes in this season are received. I think a huge percentage of the audience, frankly, is just excited to have Survivor back on the air, and it may be in a position unlike anything we have seen in a very long time, as far as people in our kind of orbit being very forgiving with their general kind of critiques of the show, because it's just fun to have it back, and hopefully the season.
In that vein, these are not the first episodes of Survivor that we've had over the past 18 months. We are just wrapping up both Survivor South Africa and Australian Survivor, as well as Big Brother 23, and hoping to cover all of those in at least some capacity over the next week or two here, as they all dovetail here, hand the torch over to Survivor US. Be good to have some content back up on the main feed there. But the fact that we've had those two Survivor seasons airing in tandem, whetting our appetite for the main course here, which it feels so reductive to call it that, and so unfair to the international Survivor seasons. Although maybe even the term international Survivor is kind of unfair, right? Because you have the one true US version and then all of the others across the world, wherever they may be. And if it's, I don't know, bundling them all together under that umbrella, maybe is unfair in its own right. But, two seasons of, I'm going to say, there are some highs and some lows, bundled in among those. I think the season of Survivor South Africa that we've had was consistently very good. I really enjoyed watching that one a lot. And I know you enjoyed watching at least part of it somewhat. Is that right? Are you still on board there?
Survivor South Africa, yes. Unfortunately, the newest season of Australian Survivor, I watched the first half-ish of the first episode, made it to the big reveal on what, like, the episode one twist was going to be, shut it off, and never watched another frame of the season. And I, based on what I saw on Twitter, was very happy with that decision, because my logic there was, if this is where we are beginning with the twists on this season, this is going to go completely off the rails at a certain point. It's just a matter of when. And it seems like that mostly came in.
Yeah, well, I guess you can tune in to whatever Australian Survivor coverage I end up doing there to find out exactly how that went. But I think they started off with a bang and then ended with a whimper, at least a little bit. There were a lot of twists, as you would expect, over the course of that season. None of them to quite the same gravity, I guess, as the one that we had sprung upon us in that first episode. But as with any season of Australian Survivor, there are some high highs, as you'd expect when you have dozens of hours of television there to consume, and also a lot of lows, where you're just sludging through the next hour, and at some point it just becomes like a sunk cost. It's like, well, I've already watched 20 hours of the season, so what's three or four more, right? The end is finally in sight. But
so that's the feeling that I don't like, is I hate when it feels like a task to watch Survivor.
Yes, and with that in mind, so setting our own expectations for this season, and also I guess your expectations for us if you're listening to this, I think we're not going to commit ourselves to, we will be in here every week without fail dissecting the latest episode. We want this to be something that we want to do, and not just a chore that we're dragging ourselves in here to do every week. And you know, life obligations and so on might make it harder some weeks than others, as always. We want to be in here every week doing this, and hopefully the season gets off to a good start and continues in that vein, and we will be thrilled to have a chance not just to watch the episode, but to come in here and dissect the episode. But while that's still up in the air, I think we're gonna not make any firm commitments on that front, but hopefully we will be here, you know, on your podcast feed every week.
Yes, exactly. I think perfectly put there, Dom. And while I did end up skipping this season of Australian Survivor, I very much enjoyed the latest season of Survivor South Africa, and would say that it did a lot to confirm to me that Survivor, like the game, can still be very fun with plenty of wacky twists thrown in along the way in the year 2021. No question about it. I will, though, acknowledge that I do have some concerns about particularly the U.S. version of Survivor along those lines. And I'm sure we'll get a bit more into that as we look ahead a bit at this upcoming season. But I absolutely want to be clear that I want to be in here. I am rooting as hard as I ever have for this season to be good. I just have, at this point, pretty publicly and for quite a long time now, been voicing concerns, particularly along the lines of the kind of social and strategic game becoming less and less important, it seems like, over time, as more and more advantages are found on the beach or just kind of fall out of the sky and into people's bags, and the themes get more and more contrived and things along those lines, and more specifically, like, I am very, very nervous that the show is gunning hard to bring in little kids, and I don't know how much I'm going to necessarily enjoy that, despite absolutely acknowledging that that might be the dead right call from Jeff and CBS's perspective.
And you mean as viewers, not in some like battle royale style, no. You know, showdown on the island of Fiji there.
As viewers. And I think, again, like, I am merely saying all of this, and any future complaints that I will potentially make, who knows, over the course of this podcast, 100% just from my own personal narcissistic perspective of what I personally enjoy about Survivor. It is completely within the realm of possibility that every single decision they make about whom to be targeting as new viewers to bring in and lock down is exactly right and a no-brainer move in their position. I do not at all want to make it sound like I know better than the people who actually run these massively successful TV shows on major networks for decades at a time. I just have concerns of a personal nature that it may diminish my own selfish enjoyment of the show, but hopefully not. Again, I am very, very nervous about coming across as too negative, especially right away. So Dom, let's dive in here. And I do, it's probably worth clarifying up front, because I'm guessing many people are thinking that a Survivor 41 preview may include some version of like previewing the cast specifically and who we like and who we don't like. I still maintain that it's a bit early for me to be calling such things. If our previous cast previews are any indication, we were very bad at providing really anything accurate or insightful back when we used to do those. But I do want to say, as far as just the cast in general goes, very happy with the changes that have been made along those lines. And what I have seen from the specific people that they ended up getting leaves me optimistic about this group, if they are in a situation where the strength of the cast is going to play a big role in how good the season ends up being, and it is not just kind of overwhelmed by mechanisms within the game.
Yeah, good vibes from this cast. On the yay or nay scale, I give them a solid yay, at least so far. And I feel like that's as granular as we want to be about this cast. I think I've mostly lost my appetite for that kind of person-by-person prediction game, where it feels like all that can happen is you make yourself look like an idiot, you say something which, if you end up talking to that person in an interview 3 months later because they did far better than you predicted them to do, then you just end up feeling awkward about it. So, I don't know. I feel like a brief summary of the cast as a whole is the way to go there. And honestly, I feel like trusting your intuition there often ends up being a good bellwether to if you're going to enjoy the season, because there have been casts in the past where I look at the cast videos and the bios and so on, and I'm just not feeling it for whatever reason. And it's rare that I feel that about the cast, but then they and the season outperform my initial expectations. And that doesn't mean you have to go in there. If you do get a negative vibe, you don't have to go in there just with this fatalistic attitude necessarily, but I think that often you kind of know when you see them, and you can be pleasantly surprised, hopefully, but most of the time, your intuition is pretty good there.
I agree with that, and yeah, I am just always going to be in favor of what it appears to me, at least, is the kind of cast we have on our hands here of people at the very least roughly familiar with the game, if not actively like super fans of the game and of the show, and have a general sense of what they want to be doing out there and who care about winning themselves. That's really all I'm looking for in a cast at this point, after, as you alluded to, several along the way that left me a little uninspired. But it is definitely an area where I feel like, particularly in very recent years, even in some of the seasons that did not end up being too good within the kind of grand scheme of Survivor season quality, at least as far as I would be concerned, the casts were still great. And it was by no means their fault necessarily that the seasons didn't end up being as compelling as others have been in the past. I don't remember if this was a main feed episode or a patron feed episode, but at a certain point in some semi-recent month, we did a podcast talking about hypothetical, like, future returnees to Survivor. And I don't think I was actively, like, doing the math on this as we were covering it in the moment, but one of the seasons that I think has the highest number of names of people that I would love to see back again is actually the Island of the Idols, which is a consensus super bottom tier season of all time, and just because of how everything ended up playing out there. And as far as I would be concerned, I think a lot of that had to do with the lack of room within the game and time within the episodes for us to really get to know a ton about a lot of the really compelling characters, and without allowing them as much opportunity as necessarily some, as maybe some other seasons, have had to really showcase what they can bring to Survivor. But cautiously optimistic again, that this cast will not get the kind of Island of the Idols treatment. And one of the reasons that I'm feeling good about that, so pro number one in the book, by the way, just for those keeping score at home, the cast looks really promising. And pro number two, as far as I'm concerned, Dom, but I know there are plenty of questions along these lines. One thing that I know we have been talking about, and brought up as like an idea we thought would be good to implement, but I never thought that it would actually happen, but it has happened, and it sounds like it's going to be the new thing going forward. They have gotten rid of the subtitles on individual seasons, and from this point forward, it is just Survivor 41, Survivor 42, etc. We have spent a lot of time, over, especially in these last couple of years, talking about the feeling compelled to give each season an explicit theme and subtitle, potentially doing a lot more harm than good, as far as a lot of these more recent seasons have gone. So pro number two is I'm feeling very excited about that prospect, although, as I mentioned, I think there are plenty of things that remain to be seen as far as if this will have any kind of impact on the kind of modern way the show is presented, and what will kind of like emerge as new themes in a time when there is no like explicit theme for them to be hammering.
One quick segue there is you mentioned returning players, and that's something that we are not getting in the foreseeable future. That was one of the more surprising things for me to read in the batch of interviews with Jeff Probst that we had coming out recently and that we looked at in preparation for this. Because if anything, I would have thought with the time gap that we've had since our last taste of Survivor and with the most recent season being Winners at War, so you have to go back to almost a full 2 years now to find Island of the Idols as a full new player season, and then going back to Edge of Extinction, David versus Goliath, Ghost Island, you're going back already 2.5-3 years, and that seems like the ideal length of time to have in between someone's first appearance and a second appearance. Like, it's not like you're having someone do the Amanda Kimmel, right? Or the Russell Hantz, where they're on your screen and surprise, here they are on your screen again. And even if they were doing that, just because of the crazy scheduling recently and Winners at War coming in between, someone who is on 39, if we ever see anyone from that season ever again, which I am not necessarily optimistic about, like I said, it would have been a full 2 years, even if it was to happen right now. So you would think, looking ahead to, you know, 43, 44, 45, when this new group, this new era has had a chance to assert itself and some favorites have emerged there, you could take a few of those, mix it in with some of the Rick Devonses or, you know, Christian Hubickies or whoever the flavor of the month was 24 months ago. And it seems like that would be a very dependable recipe for them to cling to in this this new and uncertain era of Survivor, but it sounds like that is basically off the table for the time being.
At least for the time being, and I don't think this is anything close to likely to happen, but if there were, like, Vegas betting odds on, like, the future of Survivor, and I was getting a good enough price on it, we have certainly heard Jeff say in multiple different interviews, I think, at this point, that they really want to draw a line in the sand, like Coach Wade. He didn't say that. I'm including that as my own colorful commentary here, where they want Survivor 41 to be the beginning of a new era of Survivor. And if I was getting decent enough odds on this bet, I would probably throw some small amount down on the prospect of we never get anyone who played seasons 1 through 40 back on the show. Again, I don't think that is anything close to likely. I think it's at least possible, though, that they really commit to this being Survivor 2.0, or like whatever you want to call it. I'm butchering whatever phrasing Jeff used there.
I definitely see what you mean, and I could see that being an almost ideological sacrifice that they're willing to make, where, yeah, I'm sure they would love to have Dominic Abate, and the list of names is getting pretty long at this point, frankly, especially with, you have all of the returnees from David versus Goliath, for example, and you look at the mid-30s batch of seasons, the people who haven't really had that chance to return yet, you could fill out most of an All-Star season just with those people by themselves, but it looks like they may actually be one and done just by how all of this ended up lining up. That being said, it would not shock me either if this grand relaunch doesn't get off to a good start, if they break the emergency glass and we actually see some of those people make a sudden reappearance on the screens.
I think that is a good way of putting it, and it's crossing my mind now, and I think this would be very funny, but maybe not even an inaccurate way of framing it, where, like, if we do get several seasons into this new era of Survivor and they like how it's going, maybe one of the more likely ways that they end up bringing people back from seasons 1 through 40 is kind of like a air quotes old school versus new school kind of situation, where it's half and half between people from the first 20 years and people from the new era. And it is hilarious to me that someone like Rick Devens or Dominic Abate would ever be considered an old school Survivor player, but I don't think we are necessarily able to rule that out yet. I could easily see them non-ironically presenting people who played in 2020 or 2019, excuse me, as old school Survivor players, which is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's COVID becomes like the what is it, the BC versus AD kind of line in terms of Survivor there. But to end the segue here and come back to the original point, which we circled to back in the old school days. No more themes, just season numbers now. This is Survivor 41, next season is Survivor 42, and then 43, and so on and so forth. And I think when we first learned about this, I guess we could check the tape on this and go back and listen to what we said. We were both pretty optimistic about this change, as I recall. I do think there is one way that it could open the door for something more sinister, and that's that when you have a season-defining twist, some named island where unimaginable horrors are lurking in the form of, expired idols or whatever, then that twist can often itself be game-breaking, but it also places a kind of cap, in theory, on how much other stuff can be smuggled in if that theme is still going to remain clear. So if you have, let's say, Immunity Island, actually, to go to the Survivor South Africa parallel, I'm still not fully clear on how that worked exactly, but
I'm not either. I'm going to be honest about that.
Yeah. Did not hamper my enjoyment of the season too much, but so if you're going to carve out a few minutes every episode for your visit there, and that's going to have some effect on the game and the vote and so on, that is a very different game from one in which Immunity Island is not in play. That being said, when there is Immunity Island, then you can't have so much other stuff that it overwhelms Immunity Island and the game itself, because then what's the point? It becomes self-defeating. And so I would almost rather have a game where I know coming in, this is the new thing, the new element, and we're going to get some amount of it every episode and you become accustomed to it, versus every single episode now is like a hard reset and it's here's a twist, there's a twist, here's another twist, and eventually it easily could just all blur together. And that's just in the case of individual episodes. And when you extend that to a full season and then several seasons over time, I think it's very possible that and some of this is just us aging, so take that into account. But I think it's possible that our memories collectively of these iconic Survivor events will really not be as vivid in a few years, where it's like, before it's, oh, I remember that season. That was Cook Islands. And when this person got back from Exile Island, they did this, and then so on. Versus now it's, okay, so on 41, or was it 42, someone did this with this advantage in this episode, but then the next episode, there were three more advantages, and so who even... That's ancient history at this point. Who even remembers that?
I think we're already there. I think we're well past the point of I can't differentiate which twists happened at what time and with which players. Like,
yeah, I mean, you could argue Ghost Island was really where like the explicit theme of that twist and that island was to turn every single episode into that, and that's essentially what happened. Although even there was like a little bit more of identity with the callbacks to what role the relics have played in their first seasons and so on. Whereas now it could easily be just, all right, it's 3 minutes into the episode. Who's going to find a scroll in their bag or a tree mail or something today? You know, that's going to be the new cadence of what we should expect, I think.
I am in agreement with that. And I thank you for bracing me ahead of time for the prospect that we kind of got like our monkey paw twist on the wish that we've had to get rid of the themes and just do numbers for seasons like the Super Bowl, which is something that we definitely brought up as an idea for at least the last couple of years, never really thinking it would happen. And so I am guessing if you were to go back and hear wherever it was that we recorded them, our first thoughts on finding out that the themes were gone and we were just going to go with numbers, I have to imagine that at least I was extremely optimistic about that change being made, but I now worry that you are right, and that because there is no single explicit kind of theme for any given season now, it's just going to be guns blazing harder, or however guns blaze, more than that, than what we have ever seen in the past. And there really is no limit to the extent that they may go there, because there is no theme they need to keep consistent or stay confined within. So again, really want to stress, hoping for the best. I'm always so nervous that it comes across like we're rooting against Survivor being good, which is absolutely not the case at all. But yeah, from the sounds of things, it seems like the twists may be coming in hot and heavy right away. We have heard a reasonable-ish amount, I would say, from Jeff Probst in particular at this point. And Mike Bloom has done a fantastic job over at Parade Magazine covering the upcoming season, not just the cast, but also some stuff from Jeff as well that we are probably going to be referencing over the remainder of this podcast as we kind of get into what we know about what is coming. And the number one thing that I feel like I can't stop thinking about and is kind of the primary consideration for why I am perhaps a bit more nervous than I would like to be, at the very least, about all of the twists we may have in store this season, is every single time and place that I hear Jeff talk about Survivor 41, he's talking about things in terms of this is like the monster from a horror movie, and if you don't devour the monster is going to devour you. And now I know that that, at least in part, is going to pertain to, as he keeps describing it, the conditions and circumstances being more dangerous. And the best kind of fun is dangerous fun, and this is going to be the most dangerous season of all time. And I don't love that they're making the conditions potentially, I think, even harder than they normally do. I'm always a big fan of them making it much, much easier than they tend to do. Shout out, by the way, to the aforementioned Survivor South Africa, and they may also do this on Australian Survivor, giving the contestants rain gear, I feel like, is a step in the very right direction, and the U.S. version seems to be going the opposite way there, in terms of like not giving people swimsuits anymore, let alone rain gear. The conditions are a whole separate consideration for me versus the monster that I am even more nervous about. Is it sounds like this is good. Let me pull up the quote here that left me somewhat terrified. This is
I can read it right off for you if you like. So
let's hear it in a British accent. Yes.
Okay. We approach Survivor 41 as though the game was like the monster in a horror movie. Either you devour the monster or the monster will devour you. And by giving the game the personality of a monster, it really sparked a lot of ideas. Suddenly, anything was possible. There was no twist, too big, too scary, or too controversial. It didn't matter. The game is the monster, and let me be clear, the monster is hungry.
Exactly.
The pace is absolutely relentless, says Probst. Faster than any other season. There is no time to sit back and contemplate even for a moment. You have to be assessing and reassessing your options on an hourly basis because you have no idea what is coming next. The game design has never been so dangerous.
Yes, that is the quote that left me, again, more nervous than I would like to be about what we may have in store for us as far as the game largely coming down to be on the right side of whatever the magic powers and twists and idols and advantages that kind of fall out of the sky are, or be the victim of all of those magic powers, etc. And that is, again, just speaking for me personally, this may be the dead right decision from a network TV perspective, but for me, game fan Colin Stone, that is not a good sound.
Well, from a network TV perspective, there was a choice quote from Kelly Cal, who is a big rig up in CBS, saying basically, if you're complaining about it or if you're whining about it, and those are the words he used, I'm not paraphrasing here, at least you're engaged with the show and talking about the show. So it very much is a any publicity is good publicity kind of attitude here. They basically cannot go wrong because either you're talking about the show because you like it or you're talking about the show because you don't like it. And either way, that's one eyeball on their Nielsen ratings or whatever it is nowadays. And when you hear that, it's easy to picture in your mind like the archetypal TV executive who has no idea what's going on the ground with the production of their show and has not needed to be connected to reality for a solid 20 years. And despite that, they still have the wheelbarrow full of money arriving at their front door every morning. In this case, this is a guy who is credited, at least on Wikipedia, but also by Jeff, I believe, with running Survivor of the Australian Outback up against friends in that crucial time slot all those years ago. So this is not someone who has no history with the show Survivor. They have more history here than really anyone else does. And yet they are fully on board with this kind of, tear it all up and start again kind of mentality here.
I mean, I think if at least the last 5 years, if not 10, if not extending beyond that, years of just society have taught us much, it's that you can get many wheelbarrows full of money and by leaning very hard into the like manufacturing cringe TV or like cringe articles that people hate share. And you know, clicks are clicks and eyeballs are eyeballs. And I don't know that advertisers necessarily care why people are tuning in to Survivor. I think they care that they are tuning in to Survivor, and that is what the networks are going to care about. And again, I am very eager to acknowledge that I could be dead wrong about what the right priorities yes. are from a network perspective, and it's merely just maintaining my own selfish interests that are leaving me concerned here. But I do think that to return to just the monster and Survivor 41 not having a theme may be a bit like how I feel about the fire tokens, which is another thing that has been making not headlines, but been in the Survivor news recently, where if you had told me just kind of in the dark, they're going to drop the themes and just start numbering the seasons, I would be, and I'm sure I was, extremely excited about that without fully recognizing necessarily that that would not always be just as I had personally imagined it to be. And I will say that as a person who was, at least in the years since we had been big fans of The Genius, clamoring for the prospect of in-game currency becoming a thing on Survivor, feeling like as soon as I hear that that is something that's going to be happening, I'm going to feel so much better about the show. After seeing how it played out on Survivor 40 and hearing again in just kind of the Survivor news that it required Mike White of David versus Goliath fame, among other things. By the way, been watching The White Lotus, not fully caught up yet, but liking it. Shout out to Mike White for that as well. But it took Mike White talking Jeff out of whatever idea he had for what they were going to be doing with fire tokens in 41 and beyond. And he had all these whiteboards and his...
Yeah, let's get to the quote there, because this we will be returning to this well time and time again, I think. So here's the quote. The other change for Survivor 41 was on the creative side, and that started with a phone call with former player Mike White. Survivor fans know him as the guy who almost won David vs. Goliath, but he's also one of the most successful writer, producer, directors in Hollywood. In other words, he's a master storyteller. I was in the garage with several whiteboards working on creative for Survivor 41. I called Mike for his insight into a story-related element. He listened politely as I laid out the idea, this elaborate and very complicated Survivor capitalist society that would be driven by players earning money in fire tokens and spending them on shelter, rewards, advantages. When I finished the pitch, I asked what he thought. He paused for a moment and said, "Well, it sounds interesting, but is it fun?" For Probes, those four words change everything about Survivor 41. Quote, "I couldn't erase the whiteboards fast enough," he says. "I had spent well over a year working on this idea, and yet it still felt so good to throw it out because it was so clear that it sucked. I called Matt Van Ragnon and said, 'Forget everything we've been working on, throw it out. From now on, fun is the only thing that matters.'" So,
yeah,
I don't think that is not as inherently absurd or strange as it might seem, I think. So this is the most generous reading of that quote here. So buckle up. So in game design, this is a very common trap that game designers fall into, is to get into this designer mentality where you've come up with some new concept for your game, some new twist, some new thing for the player to explore. And as a design concept, it ends up being interesting. And when you're in that phase of scribbling down on whiteboards and mapping all of this out, that part is fun. But when it comes to translating that into an experience that your players, or in this case, I guess still the players, but also the viewers, have to consume and enjoy, something gets lost in translation there. And so that is a lesson that, you know, all game designers have to learn and relearn at some point. And so this statement out of context is not inherently nonsensical. It's actually almost banal, if anything. But the fact that it has to be heard after 40 seasons of this from Mike White, like, what? How did we end up here? Like, what exactly is going on?
I think the Survivor producers having a year plus, essentially, to brainstorm what they wanted to do with this new era of Survivor, and landing on whatever it was that they landed on, that they were willing to just immediately scrap as soon as Mike White said, I don't know if that's such a great idea. I'm happy that they're willing to trust someone else's intuition, especially someone like Mike, or his expertise, whatever you want to call it, along those lines. But it does leave me very nervous about what's going to happen when they don't have a year plus to plan again. I mean, maybe having that much time made them feel like they could just keep going deeper and deeper and down the rabbit hole, and under more time sensitive pressure, they would be perhaps even like better at just keeping it simpler and potentially more enjoyable there. But
well, also, what happens if Jeff and Mike White get into a tiff and he stops returning his calls? Like, what then?
Setting aside the somewhat horrifying reality that it seems like a handful of individual celebrities seem to have a huge amount of influence over what happens on Survivor. Like, to return to the tie-in between, like, fire tokens in general and Survivor 41 not having a theme, if you had told me in 2018 they're going to implement an in-game currency on Survivor, I would be fist pumping extremely hard. But seeing what happened on Survivor 40 and hearing, without knowing the details about what Mike White thought of whatever it was Jeff had cooked up for the future of fire tokens, while still adamantly maintaining the idea myself that an in-game currency, if well executed, would be a legit 10 out of 10, like, revolutionarily great thing that Survivor could be implementing. In the case of, it sounds like, what Jeff and the rest of the producers are actually going to be bringing to the table, I'm very happy for them to just scrap it, and I will continue loving what they did with it on The Genius, and incidentally, loving the in-game currency feature on The Black Widow Brigade, which I'm watching right now on YouTube and enjoying a lot. For people unfamiliar with that, it's a bunch of mostly RHAP people playing a game very similar to various Mafia-type games that I've seen before, but with certainly a unique style to it. The episodes are really well done, so a quick shout out to them, because I'm liking that a lot, and they're nailing it with the in-game currency. And in the case, yeah,
lots of fellow podcasters and doctors and doctor podcasters on that show. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've failed a couple of times to complete this point without getting sidetracked, but I am very nervous now, Dom, that the lack of themes, much like fire tokens before them, are going to somehow find an ironic ending for me, where, like, a year from now I'm going to be in here pleading with them to bring back the themes for one reason or another.
It is funny that the two groups who have the most sway over Jeff at this point are the men on the street, who appear to be an average of 9 years old at this point, is the demographic that we're going for, and then also mid-50s Hollywood celebrities who, you know, just have Jeff in their Rolodex, and they just casually fire off ideas whenever they want. Like, those are the two biggest creative influences on Survivor as we enter this new era now.
I mean, I don't even think that is a joke. I think that is pretty much dead right, particularly the part about, it appears to me, the increased, I don't know if influence is the right word, but them feeling compelled to make sure that parents look forward to watching this with their kids, and the kids look forward to watching it every week. And again, from, like, a network TV perspective, I think this actually could make a ton of sense, where, like, every adult in America who would have heard of Survivor has probably heard of Survivor by now and checked it out. And I know we did pick up a large number of new viewers who were, like, binging it on Netflix or Hulu or wherever over quarantine, and so maybe that should be a demographic worth perhaps considering. But it definitely seems like, particularly in recent years, they have been going a lot harder at making this like a very kid-friendly show. And another news item that we have learned about is...
Well, I think it's worth also just touching on where that fun... Because that's a very nebulous term, right? Like, what's the goal of this game? Well, it's meant to be fun. Great. Thanks for the detail there, right? It's worth asking where that fun is meant to come from. Because to me, if you want to trace this back to its early days, it's the fun comes from you take a group of compelling people and you make them play this game, which brings out a lot of their personality traits in this really unique context. And that's what's fun about it. And usually if the cast is fun, then the season is fun. And it takes some really severe game-breaking twists to drag that down. Conversely, if the cast just doesn't pop, if it misses the mark for whatever reason, then the best, most ingenious twist in the world is not going to elevate that to make it interesting, right? So I think it's always the people at the core of the show who are meant to keep it interesting. And it seems like certainly in the 30s, but maybe before then too, we moved into this phase of it's the game itself that is meant to be the exciting thing here. So it's Blindside and its advantages and twists and so on. And now we seem to be entering this like postmodern or hypermodern phase where it's not even the game itself that's meant to be fun. It's the twist to the game. It's the changes from the game, which itself is, that's stale. That's old news. It's here's this new thing, which is not what you've seen before. That's what's meant to be fun about it. So to me, that is like the ultimate loss of faith in the core concept of the show to renew itself. And it may be that we said that we both are pretty high on this cast, at least at a first glance. It may be that they are doing good work trying to like keep the season afloat while these bombs are being rained down on it from, you know, production headquarters here.
I think that's a really good way of putting it, and I'm gonna, I think, have that same concern that you just flagged up about the cast maybe needing to do some heavy lifting to overcome their idea of fun for many seasons still to come, because I think you nailed it in setting up what it sounds like, at least to me, they consider to be kind of the driving force behind the show now. And again, they may be totally right that like they have to constantly reinvent themselves and reinvent the game, or they would lose a much larger percentage of the audience than I am necessarily in touch with. I absolutely trust the people at CBS itself to know who's watching better than I, some random idiot on the internet, am aware of. But to return though to one thing that it sounds like they are deeming fun this season, we have gotten word that a couple of new things are going to be in store for us here. Number one, Jeff is going to, from time to time, I don't know if it's going to be every week, but I would guess it's probably pretty close to that amount in plenty of timelines, break the fourth wall in the TV episodes and talk to the audience about whatever is going on. And right away, that leaves me nervous about complexity, maybe the wrong word, but the sheer volume of number of new and exciting and perhaps even fun things that the audience is going to be that they are going to want the audience to be able to keep track of as each episode goes on, and there's suddenly this brand new twist that we've never heard about, and Jeff, like, for the first time ever, feels compelled to he feels like he has to have a one-on-one with us as audience members, perhaps in the same kind of spirit as him breaking out the whiteboard during the Cambodia Final Six Tribal Council. I think we could get plenty of things along those lines where something so not necessarily shocking but like unheard of is going to happen as like a twist within the game that we need Jeff to explain it to us before we see it play out.
I don't mind that, I think, because how this often plays out in practice is some twist gets introduced and let's say a contestant stumbles across it, right? And they unfold the parchment and they start reading it and you can't even see the wording. So you're having to like listen closely to what they're saying. And sometimes that's not even clear. And they haven't seen this before. So they're reading it at the same time as they're processing it for the first time. So that isn't a great way to introduce a twist to an audience. And often what happens is you see them reading that and then you have this like Big Brother style retake where we cut to the confessional and it's just them repeating exactly what they've just said out loud to themselves, and it's just a waste of time. So
yeah,
I don't mind that aspect of it. What I don't want to happen there is there's some new twist and the reveal there itself is going to be this big compelling moment, and instead it loses all of that excitement and momentum because Jeff pops up breaking the fourth wall and your immersion for some explainer, you know, a minute in advance.
I think that is a concern. The concern that I have is I agree that if we are going to be in this world where there's so much going on that the audience is going to have a hard time understanding how a twist works this week and then have a hard time understanding how the twist works the following week, you could be totally right. And they could be totally right that having Jeff just explicitly walk us through it is the best way to handle that. My concern is merely being in a state where that is something that is happening in the first place and how they handle it as if I were in a perfect world, is there would be nothing to handle along these lines. People would be able to just follow whatever is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the other thing, we'll see. That is an area, by the way, as with pretty much everything else that we've talked about for this podcast, where could easily be completely off base there. It's entirely possible that all of these concerns are like totally unfounded. One other thing, though, that leaves me a bit nervous is another kind of fun addition, as they would probably tell it, is we are going to have on-screen rebus puzzles, like picture puzzles that you did when you were 8 years old, popping up that are like Survivor related. And again, this concerns me personally because I am not generally someone who's like a big fan of kids TV these days, and certainly saw what happened to Big Brother over the last few years and have just like completely lost interest in that. Like, I find that show, and I say this, I haven't seen the newest season or last couple of seasons besides All Stars, and maybe this is totally unfair of me, but like at a certain point a couple of years ago, Big Brother became just like legitimately unwatchable to me because it was so so clearly for little kids at this point.
We used to we had a stretch of several seasons where we did exactly one podcast on the season, and it was week one saying, okay, well, it seems like the season's off to a reasonable start, and who knows if we'll be back in here in a few weeks to break all of this down again, and if it is, then great. And it turns out we never were, because it wasn't great. And I had a tweet I would say about 6 weeks ago to the effect of, it's so nice to be excited about a Big Brother season again. And that did not last too long, let me tell you. Although, I don't know. I think and I'll save this for the Big Brother podcast, but I think you're either anti-cookout, in which case the whole season is just a complete non-starter for you from the outset, or you're pro-cookout, but most of that seems to overlap with being interested in like specific outcomes within that, which the structure of the cookout meant were never realistically going to happen, probably. And so everyone was set up for disappointment. There was no like specific demographic of viewer who actually was set up to enjoy what's going on here. So yeah,
I can't speak on that at all personally. All I know is over the last like week or so at the time of this recording, I had thought that everyone was like loving this season, at least people like on my Twitter timeline talking about this being like one of the best seasons ever. And then within like 24 hours of it just being down to the cookout, everyone hated it. We're all out on this season. Like, there's only one person that I ever liked in the first place. There are one or two people that I was even rooting for, and anything else is going to be trash. I would love to someday understand whatever just happened there. But the larger point for me, and why I brought up Big Brother, is they had on Frankie Grande on Big Brother, the brother of Ariana Grande, and it seemed like that was a pretty clear line in the sand where the target demographic became explicitly kids. They want to bring in a much younger audience than ever before, and I am very nervous about Survivor going that direction because, as I said, it became unwatchable for me on Big Brother, not because of necessarily all of the shenanigans and penalty costumes that I had been not a huge fan of in the years leading up to that, but was still able to sit through. To me, what made Big Brother, and I don't use this word lightly, it became unwatchable to me, is the confessionals. The way that they have the contestants talk to the audience one-on-one was impossible for me to make it through three times a week. And obviously Survivor is not three times a week, but I am very fearful.
Well,
although
I mean, if you're Australian, it is. And,
that's true. Yeah.
Honestly, watching Australian Survivor felt very reminiscent of watching Big Brother this season a lot of the time.
I again, did not make it through too much of that, and we'll leave the commentary there to you, Dom, and whoever you end up having on for these other podcasts, or maybe you'll just do some solo pods there. But I am not thinking that this is even likely to happen now or anytime soon, but the history of confessionals on Big Brother, I feel like, is one of the kind of most stark contrasts between these days and like the early days. And you can pretty clearly see like people along the way having a huge impact on how the show would be presented from that point forward. And two names that very quickly come to mind, and sorry for all the non Big Brother people, for me is, I feel like Rachel Riley and Paul Abrahamian, like as soon as they came on, the Big Brother producers were so happy with what they got out of those two in particular, that from their points forward, so much more was like deliberately aimed at recreating the way that they would talk to the camera. And I just couldn't make it. I like both of them well enough, as far as I know. But when the entire show starts becoming more and more like that, it legitimately was something I could no longer sit through there. And I just am so fearful. And again, I don't think this is going to happen anytime soon, but just Big Brother has scarred me to watching that show go from so, so good to just awful. Has made me perhaps way too nervous about Survivor doing exactly the same thing. But for the last few years, I have been very paranoid that that is kind of the trajectory we are heading down, as far as trying to make sure that 8-year-olds are very clear on who to be rooting for and who to be rooting against, and have to be happy on finale night. And I feel like that removes, for me personally, not necessarily for the audience at large, a lot of what I enjoyed about this show in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see. And by the way, there is no chance that I'm going to be able to just like cleanly make it through the season getting all of the answers to the rebus puzzles. Somewhere along the way, I'm going to get owned by one of these puzzles for sure.
Well, okay. Here's my question about that whole concept. Are these kids, these whiz kids at home who apparently have an enthusiasm for rebus puzzles that was missing from our generation, are they actually going to be pausing the episode so that they can scuttle along to their tablets or whatever and going on the CBS website and going to the thing and entering their answers and doing this repeatedly long term every week? Like, is that, do kids behave that way? Like, parents, teachers, whatever, chime in here. I really do need to know.
I do not believe I am going to be the expert you are looking for as far as the behavior of children this upcoming season, or God willing, anytime soon. So we'll reach out. We'll find out. Some parent out there surely watches this show. Actually, you know what? I'm sure Rob Cesternino is going to be talking about like what his kids think of Survivor, if not now, then very soon. So I'm sure we will have answers along those lines that are going to come from much better sources than either of the two of us there, Dom. But yeah, I am not thrilled, to say the least, with the transition from a kind of understated attempt to bring little kids in as part of like the target demographic to a very overt attempt to do so.
Yeah.
And again, it may be the completely right move for CBS.
That caveat hangs over all of this. But if you see any kind of intellectual property that you enjoy going in that kind of direction, like, yeah, you understand, oh, they're a business, they're there to make money. Like, that's not new information, right? And there's always someone who's there in the peanut gallery willing to blurt that at you. But, like, we know, it's just, we don't like it. we want it the way it used to be. Anyway, what else do we have to get to here in terms of the preseason stuff? I guess one big thing is it's a shorter season, because this is something which was not the mind of Jeff Probst having 18 months to work his magic. This is forced upon them by logistics. It's, we have a strict rhythm of a 39-day, 40-day filming cycle, which we're very accustomed to. We know this works for us. All of our, supply chains and workflows and everything are built with that in mind. But it turns out this whole COVID thing means we need this quarantine period if we're going to do any of this safely. And so, as a result, we're cutting this down to 26 days, and the rest of the game has to be scaled accordingly. So we're going to see, I imagine, the same number of in-game rounds and therefore in-game challenges and so on, except all of this is happening on a shorter timescale. So it used to be, for most of the game, you would have these three-day cycles. So one day would be a reward challenge, one day would be immunity with the tribal council that night, and then there would just be a day off in between. So maybe that day off for the first, seven or eight cycles gets cut out, and that's how we accelerate this forward. And then the last few days of the game, usually final six, final five onwards, it's, okay, 36, 37, 38, 39, back-to-back, all of those days are taken up, and maybe you can compress that further. I don't know if you would ever get to the point of doing like a double boot where it's several rounds on the same day. But it seems like there is, if you want to slim down the Survivor filming cycle, there is time to do that without really necessarily having to lose anything. The bigger question is going to be, how does that change the feel of the game? And when we heard this news for the first time, my take on it was, I don't know if you're going to be able to tell, like, if this actually happened, but they just forgot to update the Chirons or whatever, and it's still as if it was a 39-day game. I don't think you would notice that something was amiss. I don't know if that would jump out at you from watching the show, and I think I still feel that way.
I think they could. I agree. That was essentially the page I was on as well, and if they wanted to go that route, sorry to interrupt you, but...
No, I was going to say, I've been interrupting you more than enough, so by all means, I've returned the favor.
I mean, I think they definitely could make it feel essentially exactly the same. Like you said, if we were just blind on the Chirons that pop up and tell us what day it is, I think they could easily get away with tricking us into, or they just lied about what day things were happening on. I think they could easily get away with that and not make it feel too much different. The concern I have is that they don't want to do that. I'm always a huge advocate of making it easier than they have been in recent years on the players as far as the conditions go. And I think that a 26-day schedule could go potentially a long way in people not just like losing their minds at a certain point within the game and being just so hungry constantly. If they're getting reward challenges or like rewards with immunities every other day rather than every 3 days, I think a lot of this could add up to hypothetically be a really good thing for the show. And under that kind of circumstance, I would be pretty strongly in favor of permanently switching to a 26-day schedule. But it sounds like because it's only 26 days, they're going out of their way to make sure that it's harder than usual, so that right. kind of like balances out the lack of extra time at the end for people to lose their minds and go crazy with starvation, etc. And furthermore, even knowing that people talk all the time about how one of the most underreported or underrated elements to Survivor that doesn't come through really at all in the TV version is just the sheer boredom of there is nothing to do out there, and cutting out one day per cycle could potentially go a long way in keeping the players kind of just more energized as far as the game itself is concerned. And it seems like, based on that quote you read earlier from Jeff, that they're going to ramp that up even further than just cutting out the day off would do organically, that they aren't even necessarily going to be satisfied with going with having the players go to a tribal council every other day or so, and that he doesn't want anyone to be able to sit still for more than like an hour or two without having to worry about some new consideration. And remains to be seen how that ends up playing out.
Yeah, you do notice, I think, on a lot of seasons where you get into the 30s, you know, day 31, day 32, and it's just at the face of the game where things should be heating up and it should be a pivotal moment. And if you're going to turn the tables, this is maybe the last chance you have to do it. But because it's been a full month of exhaustion and starvation and so on, some of that fight just isn't in you anymore. And you're seeing a bunch of players all playing at a heavily diminished capacity, and whoever is able to like operate at 60% instead of 40% just has an edge automatically. And I think removing that from the equation would be great, and abbreviating the game in this way is a good step towards doing that, but they're working explicitly against that with making the conditions that much harder. So yeah, it's, I guess we're getting something over here and it's getting taken away over here. I don't know if that's just a wash then, ultimately, in terms of how that's going to play out.
Yeah, it's yet another thing, like the fire tokens, like finding out that they're going to drop the themes and just do numbers. In the dark, I would be so happy to find out that Survivor, I think I would be happy at least to find out that Survivor's just going down to 26 days and cutting out the day off, or that would be the timeline I would hope for if I found out that there was an accelerated schedule, I suppose. But ultimately we get like the monkey paw version of it where that just compels them to ramp up the things that I was nervous about, in the first place. So we'll see how it goes. And I really, again, want to be clear that like, I am rooting so hard for a large percentage of this podcast that we have just done, Dom, to age horribly. And this ends up being like one of the best seasons ever made. And we're just edgelord hipster idiots that are basically like 14 years old, just hating the whole world and seeing all the negativity and everything. Like, I desperately want that timeline to come in where every week we're excited to talk about the latest Survivor happenings, and this new era of the show can be as good as I am certain Jeff and the rest of the producers want it to be and plan it as best they can to be. It is just seeming to me at this point, and again, hopefully I'm dead wrong, like a lot of the things that I have not enjoyed as much about the show, particularly in recent years, maybe getting even more attention and more of a role within the game at the expense of the things that I feel like made the show really good and compelling to me personally in the first place. But for sure, would love to be wrong here. I there is very little that I desire more than for this new era of Survivor to be a total home run. And I really hope the people who have made it to this point in the podcast understand that this, all of these criticisms come not because I dislike Survivor at all. It is because I love Survivor that I want it to continue to be something that I can keep loving.
Mm-hmm. What else is there from all of this, this deluge of new information that we want to get to here?
The only other thing, like, I know we have certainly talked about plenty here today. It just seems weird to me that despite having some interviews and like video clips with Jeff, and certainly again had enough to chew on for the course of over an hour at this point, it still feels like they have told us shockingly little about what specifically is going to be happening on this season.
Yeah, I think part of that is just the usual pregame press has been disrupted by COVID and everything. So not only the actual pregame press in terms of flying people out there on location to do contestant interviews and such, but then also just you're not having quite the same like media rounds, I guess, as we get closer to the season airing. So a lot of that is up in the air, and maybe that's meant to add to that sense of mystery, right? Is anything could be coming around the corner, even for us, which we'll see about that. One thing that stood out to me, it stood out to me at the time, and I'm forgetting it as I bring it up now, so clearly didn't stand out all that much, but hopefully as I meander my way through this sentence without hesitation, repetition, or deviation, I will stumble back upon that.
We call this the Colin Stone method. Yeah, you just keep going until you remember what you were trying to talk about.
Here we go. So there was some allusion to you could lose your vote. And I don't know if this is going to be in connection to the risk which is going to be associated with some of these advantages, which I do like, by the way. I do like that it sounds like it's not going to be as much of you stick your hand in a tree or you look at a rock and here's an idol or anything. It's you have to really assess the situation and like take a punt on if you want to go for this or not, and maybe going for it at all is a mistake, which it really never is nowadays, because you can just do that safely. And I know that like thinking back to when Wentworth, for example, was going for the idol at the challenge, right? Like that was great TV. I thought that was okay. Wow, that this is adding something new to a challenge, which normally, you know, you kind of zone out for a little bit. So if there's more of that, and that process does have more involved with it, I think that would be good. But the whole losing your vote thing, I think the intention there clearly is to make the tribals more interesting, right? It's you can never have a well-laid plan because your vote could disappear at any time. But I think the actual consequence of that, if it happens, is going to be, why would I bother coming up with some innovative harebrained scheme where if I get you to split your votes this way and I then flip over and I do this and it's a like 3-2-1 margin or it's a very close-knit thing, if I know that one of those votes could just disappear or be stolen or doubled or whatever it is, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give you the interesting move that you get to show as the climax of your episode with hashtag blindside and a bunch of shocked faces. I'm just gonna stick with the majority and vote someone out 7-2, because if that becomes 6-2 or 6-3 or whatever, that's fine. Whereas my move blowing up in my face, maybe I'm not willing to risk that just for the sake of giving you good TV, which is what I was already trying to do, but you're not letting me do it.
I think that's something we've seen in plenty of, particularly the more recent seasons, is the influx of idols and advantages and very unpredictable things while pursuing a noble goal of wanting tribal council to be interesting and unpredictable, which I think makes a complete sense from the perspective of the producers. I think in practice does indeed end up yielding pretty routinely less interesting results, because the players within the game are very rightly, as far as I'm concerned, horrified that whatever blindside they try to pull is going to be undone by some completely unforeseeable twist or advantage or whatever. And that drastically reduces the incentive to like make a big move, as far as I'm concerned, in a lot of different common-ish, at least, kind of survivor situations, and heavily incentivizes just going with the safest play. And I think it could be, at the end of the day, kind of counterproductive to throw in so many things that the players become just like horrified about what kind of monsters may be under the bed at that tribal council. So yeah, it remains to be seen, and hopefully they are able to strike a good balance, and do so in a way that Jeff's explanations to the audience are concise and interesting, and we all understand what's going on, and can enjoy whatever it is that we end up seeing play out. But yeah, I think one way or another, whether it ends up working brilliantly or being a total kind of like shark jump situation, I think we are in store for a pretty new feeling Survivor. And I'm that in an absolute sense, I would say is compelling to me. I don't know which direction it's going to go, but I am a person who appreciates a good sweat. And I think this is a big, big sweat we have coming up for us here as Survivor 41 kicks off, because the anticipation is going to be not necessarily at an all-time high, and certainly not an all-time high as far as like ratings and the American public are concerned, but among Survivor super fans, I think this is one of the most anticipated premieres in history. I think they're going to get an abnormal amount of kind of benefit of the doubt in the early goings of this season. And whether it's really good or really bad, I think Survivor 41, and particularly the early episodes of Survivor 41, are going to be a big, big swing point in how the future of the show ends up going and what people think of it.
So to bring this full circle, one other way of framing all of this is, here's the headline from the Variety TV article explaining the new format changes and so on. Quote, Survivor is going back to basics in its 41st season with a stripped down format and new fans. So this is kind of a different way of looking at this here, where instead of we're taking this existing product with all of the bells and whistles that it has these days and just adding even more bells and even more whistles on top of that, one way of seeing this might be you strip the show back to its core essentials, and part of that is forced upon you by the scheduling and so on. And once you've done that and there's no special themed island over here, and there's no A versus B versus C division based on you know, attitude or class or whatever, at that point, you're kind of just seeing the show in its purest form, and then you can pick and choose what to add onto it in a way which maybe feels both old school and new school at the same time. It might actually, if all goes right, hit that perfect blend there.
I certainly hope so. I see what you're getting at, although I am pretty skeptical at this point that whatever we end up seeing is something that the average Survivor superfan, which I'm guessing is the bulk of people hearing us at this point, would deem back to basics Survivor. I understand and enjoy and appreciate the kind of spin zoning going on in calling it that, but I do not believe that is something that many of us would be concluding after seeing whatever it is we see on Wednesday.
It is worth noting, too, to close this out, that the average superfan maybe is different from what it was pre-COVID, where there is a whole new batch of curious dabblers and then fans and now diehard super-duper fans who have joined the show and been binging the show during COVID, right? Like, if you're stuck in your house under quarantine, what better thing to do than to fire up Netflix, fire up Paramount Plus? Lots of better things to do than firing up Paramount Plus. That's just non-functional as far as I can tell, but anyway, you can just binge old Survivor seasons, and so there will be a lot of people now who have the same history of having watched all the seasons in the most basic terms there, but they don't have the baggage of being a fan over all the years and watching these seasons live week by week and consuming all of the dialogue and all of the drama and so on that was going on at the time. And a lot of this will be fresher in their memories. You know, they watched these seasons recently. They could draw up the parallel to, I don't know, Gabon or whatever, which maybe we couldn't because we haven't seen that season in years. But they've seen that season recently because they've seen every single season recently. And so this new breed of superfan, they might have a whole new experience of watching the show and maybe new standards that they're applying to it, where for them, if you've gone from Borneo to Heroes versus Villains to Edge of Extinction in the space of a few weeks, maybe, at that point, the whole idea of purity or old school versus new school, whatever, like maybe that just isn't a meaningful concept to you in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of putting a damper on the casuals versus super fans versus dabblers season that I'd now really like to see. But yeah,
well, that was going to be 42, and then they abolished the names, so we're never getting that anymore.
No, I'm going to be very curious to see what that particular section of the audience ends up thinking, because it's absolutely something that I've seen popping up on my Twitter timeline, like all quarantine long, is people say, oh my God, I just finally watched Survivor for the first time. And now I've watched 40 seasons of it and I can't wait, for whenever that show ends up coming back. But one thing actually that I meant to bring up, probably about an hour plus ago at this point, back when we were talking about Survivor South Africa and Australian Survivor, kind of whetting our appetite, or perhaps spoiling our appetite, depending on how all of this goes, from the perspective of someone who has had Survivor in their life like I have for 20 plus years at this point, and a decade plus now for you, Dom, while I do very much enjoy some Jonathan LaPaglia and some Nico from Survivor SA, whose last name I do not know, and I am just now realizing that, and love both of them as hosts and love both of those franchises in general, I definitely do not feel the same kind of sentimentality that I absolutely do feel as much shit as I have given Jeff over the years. And I think the bulk of that has been at least reasonable, or at least I've tried to keep it fair and not just like inventing reasons to give him a hard time. I will absolutely acknowledge that however long it was between the end of Winners at War and whenever Jeff tweeted out that video of him on location in Fiji, and I just hadn't heard his voice in, I'm going to ballpark it at like right around a year or so, for, again, like the literal only time in my adult life that I have gone that long without seeing or hearing from Jeff. I'm not going to say I got chills, but it was that sort of vibe. Like, I was deeply sentimental just hearing that guy's voice again. And I'm sure a few days from now, even though we've just spent the better part of an hour and 20 minutes or so being a bit nervous about what we may be in store for, let there be no mistake that, again, I am rooting very hard for this season of Survivor and for the future of Survivor. And come Wednesday night, I'm positive I'm going to be just as giddy as everyone else.
Yeah, I would co-sign all of that. I still, regardless of my actual expectations for the season, I still get that that thrill when the opening music comes on, and it's that opening sequence will always captivate me. Almost, even if I was fully spoiled somehow and I knew the season was going to be an absolute garbage fire, that by itself, I would tune in for the first episode and then probably tune in for all the rest, because that's just how I'm wired and they know that I'm never leaving no matter what I say. So here we are. But yeah, it definitely will be tuning in with trepidation, but mostly excitement on Wednesday, and hopefully it is, you know, everything that they want it to be and everything that we want it to be, if that's even possible.
Yeah, we were talking recently, Dom, about shows, and by we, I mean I was talking recently, and you were observing me talking about it recently, shows that we've just, like, outright quit on, and I definitely remember that it was during BB16. I don't remember the exact episode, but like there came a point for me in Big Brother 16 where for the first time ever in my Big Brother viewing career, I missed an episode. I watched and rewatched every single episode from BB2 through BB15 multiple times, and probably 2/3, 3/4 of the way or so through BB16. I missed an episode and never felt compelled to go catch up on it again. And I see no circumstance with this season of Survivor where that becomes the case. I don't think there's any chance that I'm going to be quitting Survivor anytime soon, let alone skipping episodes. I think like the absolute worst case for this season of Survivor and probably the next at least few, and this is again talking only about like the darkest of dark timelines here, is I may not watch it live. I may just DVR it and watch it later that night and hopefully not get spoiled on it by Twitter. But again, now recognizing what kind of like pessimistic sounding note that is, but I mean it in a good way of like Survivor is far from me for being like in consideration to just lose all hope on. And for the final time, I promise here, rooting extremely hard for this season to exceed my expectations, obviously, and I'm super self-conscious about how I may have come across over the course of this podcast, but truly, like, I just am this way because it would break my heart to get to that point with Survivor that I have gotten to with Big Brother.
I feel like if, you know, election season has told us anything, it's that you have to at least make a credible threat to take your business elsewhere, or there's no reason for them to to listen to you and offer you change. So for my part, I will be swearing off Survivor and watching The Bachelor from now on, unless all of my demands are met.
Okay, well, this should make for some thrilling podcasting then this upcoming season, Dom, but I believe that is enough from me here this week, and truly hope that I was not too much of a downer here, and that people can themselves, even if I'm not someone necessarily loving every single aspect of this new season. I certainly don't want to be trying to, I'm not at all trying to like talk anyone out of enjoying Survivor. I totally get
This is some like Cochrane 1.0-esque equivocation over.
Okay, like, I'm just nervous. I hate that I come across potentially at least as the guy who's like just bashing Survivor, and it is not intended that way at all. These are just concerns that I have.
Well, sure. Yeah. And there are no shortage of people who just bash Survivor, and that's all they do. That's all their engagement with the show is. But I think it's usually pretty clear to an observer who is doing it from a place of love and who is doing it because they're grouching and need something to complain about. And I would not put you in the latter camp, at least on this, possibly another.
Okay, well, you are an expert in being in that latter camp, Dom, the Edgelord of Extinction over here, so I'm grateful that you do not deem me a part of that group. But yeah, anyway, I think we've covered all that we know to be covering at this point. I don't know what really even to be expecting, if anything, as far as like new information that may come out between now and premiere night, but not too long in between regardless here. So this is probably going to be the last time people hear from us before Survivor is officially back on, which again, as we got into at the beginning of this podcast a long time ago at this point, still barely feels real to me. I can't believe that we're actually about to have another season of Survivor airing live, but I'm sure we'll be there Wednesday night watching along, and many people who have made it this far into this podcast will be there as well. Dom, anything else that you wanted to get to?
I'm good. See you on Wednesday.
Yeah, we will talk to you guys. I'm sure we'll do something after the premiere. The one episode that I guarantee we will have some sort of coverage on to find out how we ultimately feel about what the new season is looking like, is we will certainly break down whatever we end up seeing on the premiere. Is it a 2-hour premiere? Am I making that up?
2 hours, I think.
Okay, might be making that up. I don't know. Dom just says yes at this point in the podcast. Just get out of here. So we should probably do that. Guys, he is on Twitter @DomHRV. I am on Twitter @ColinStone. bonus episodes, currently talking The Mole 2 over on the Patreon feed at patreon.com/DomandColin for anyone who would be interested in that sort of thing. But yeah, I believe that is going to do it for us here today. So enjoy the premiere, despite what it may have sounded like my preferences were over the last hour and a half or so. And I will continue to hopefully do the same. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody.